Ford Tough?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. By the end of the day, we could have a vote in Congress on the automaker loans. But the people who run Ford say they don't need the money. They've bailed out of the bailout. Ford says it can pull itself up by its own bootstraps. What we want to know is, why is Ford able to say this, but GM and Chrysler cannot? Marketplace's Dan Gretsch looked into it.
Ford's sales have tanked. Its buyers have gone foreign. The company's bleeding billions. But David Cole at the Center for Automotive Research says Ford made a critical move back in 2006, when loans were plentiful and cheap. The company set up a $23 billion credit line.
They said to their creditors at that time, you can own the company, but we need the money. That right now is a very important asset that Ford has without dipping into a federal loan at this point.
In the last 3 years, Ford has closed factories, eliminated 50,000 jobs, and sold off Jaguar, Land Rover, and Aston Martin. Still, Cole says Ford is fragile.
They may not need a loan, but if there's a failure of major competitors because of the failure then of the supply structure to the industry, their world ends as well.
Ford's focusing on becoming a leader in hybrid powertrains and eventually electric cars. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Time for the daily roundup of closings and job cuts. Office Depot says it will shut down 112 stores in the next 3 months. Kodak says it will not make a profit for the year now, and executives won't get raises next year. And mining company Rio Tinto said it's laying off 14,000 workers. Still, the prospect of helping the auto industry is carrying the stock markets. So far, some modest gains. The Dow is up 54 points to 8745. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are both up 5 points. Mostly gains overseas, 3-5% in Asia by the close. Most European markets are slightly higher. The CEO of Wells Fargo said something this morning that might give us a little reason for optimism. John Stump said the housing market seems to be bottoming out, finally. Even in California, more stuff is selling. And that's a direct quote. Which brings me to this. Congress holds a hearing today on what to do with the remainder of the $700 billion bailout. Hint, hint, housing market. Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
The Treasury Department has a top-down approach to the bailout, inject money into banks, and hope it trickles down to consumers as loans. But banks are holding on to the money. Members of the Bailout Oversight Board are expected to discuss that problem today before the House Financial Services Committee. Guy Sakala publishes Inside Mortgage Finance.
You're going to hear, let's do more for consumers, let's do more for taxpayers who are actually funding this bailout.
The head of the oversight panel has said the bailout has to start with homeowners to be effective. Eric Stein of the Center for Responsible Lending says most lawmakers at today's hearing will agree.
I would expect the sentiment to be expressed loudly that Treasury needs to focus on keeping homeowners in their homes.
It will be up to Congress to change things. The oversight panel doesn't have any power to set policy. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
A collection of labor and public interest groups wants money to go elsewhere besides housing. They say Main Street needs $900 billion over the next 2 years to get back on track. Their priorities are tax cuts, investment in green technology, and infrastructure spending. Listening to the Morning Report for Wednesday, December 9th on Marketplace.org. We talk a lot about oil prices on this program, but not as much about that liquid you drink every morning. Coffee is the world's second most traded commodity, and it's getting more expensive. Here's Stacey Vanek Smith.
When the price of oil spiked, so did the price of fertilizer. Coffee farmers couldn't afford as much for their crops, and now the world might be facing a coffee shortage. Brazil produces about a third of the world's coffee, and growers there say their crops will be about 20% smaller next year. That news has already jacked up prices. Lovell Jarvis is an agriculture economist at UC Davis.
In this type of market, one would expect the prices would be passed on fairly quickly to the consumer.
The global coffee market is worth more than $40 billion and is expected to balloon to about $60 billion by 2012. Still, Jarvis says coffee fiends could get a break.
Consumption has been declining a little bit because of the economic recession. It doesn't take but a relatively small decrease in consumption to drive that price down.
Still, the International Coffee Organization predicts demand for coffee will outstrip supply by about 6% next year. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Today's the last day of the Hajj, the pilgrimage to holy cities in Saudi Arabia. In Islam, each able-bodied Muslim who can afford it is supposed to make the pilgrimage at least once in their lives. But this year, it's kind of tough to afford it. Daniel Estrin reports.
For devout Muslims, it's the dream of a lifetime.
Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah.
Nearly 3 million worshippers from about 100 countries arrived for the five-day Hajj. But U.S. travel agents say Hajj bookings dropped dramatically as Americans are cutting down on expenses. 2,000 fewer U.S. visas were issued than last year. In spite of the global economic frenzy, this year's Hajj still had a record amount of international pilgrims. Waiting lists can often run as long as 10 years, and Muslims don't want to miss the opportunity. For retailers in Saudi Arabia, the Hajj is the equivalent of Black Friday. Specialty shops selling electronics or clothing stock up on all kinds of goods. Some shopkeepers report five times their usual earnings. I'm Daniel Estrin for Marketplace.
We've talked about how charities are struggling with the economic fallout, but so are think tanks. They also have a good purpose, many of them, to help solve problems. But they've also had a tough time with money lately. Ronnie Radbill reports from Washington.
The fate of Washington's 340 think tanks isn't on most people's minds in a struggling economy, but thinking costs money. As stock values tumble, so do foundation endowments, which help fund many smaller, nonpartisan policy shops. Steve Gunderson, president of the Council on Foundations, says in the last few months, the financial bottom fell out.
We have never had a drop of this magnitude this quickly in a two-month period to literally see a 30 to 50% evaporation of endowment.
Gunderson estimates endowments have lost well over $200 billion in value over the past year. Jamie Court, president of the nonprofit Consumer Watchdog, says that's not good for the general public that wants issues like health care, energy independence, and government reform addressed.
The think tanks that are going to be hurting, unfortunately, are the ones that are more impartial, nonpartisan.
Meanwhile, influential policy shops like the Heritage Foundation, Competitive Enterprise Institute, and Cato are on better financial footing, receiving donations from individuals, foundations, and corporations.
The think tanks that are actually going to do very well in this climate are the ones that are funded by industry. Clearly, big companies have a financial incentive to pour maybe even more money into think tanks that think like big corporations.
With a changing political climate, a worldwide financial crisis, and two wars, there's going to be a lot to think about in Washington. Jim McGann directs the Think Tanks and Civil Society program at the University of Pennsylvania. He fears think tanks won't be able to develop new policy initiatives.
How prepared are they, given the financial constraints, to do the big and small rethink on a whole range of policy issues? And I think given the constraints, the answer to that is unlikely.
What is likely is that a steep recession could push many of the city's think tanks into shutting down. Just as a new administration is hungry for impartial views from some of the brightest minds in the nation's capital. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
Barack Obama wants to stimulate the economy with a lot of government spending, a huge public works program. And it might be necessary. But as always with government projects like this, you have to be careful of special interests. Commentator Robert Reich has a few suggestions.
No economy can function without enough pull from the demand side. But consumers have stopped buying. Businesses won't invest in plant and equipment without buyers at the other end, and exports are dead in the water because the world is in recession. That leaves government as buyer of last resort, which is why Congress and the upcoming Obama administration are planning a large stimulus package to be signed almost as soon as the new president is sworn in, a little less than 6 weeks from now. Getting it enacted won't be difficult. Even deficit hawks know that when millions of people are unemployed, offices vacant, and factories shuttered, deficit spending that gets the economy growing again will make future deficits smaller. The real political challenge will be to avoid pork barrel projects and corporate welfare. Yet Washington lobbyists and trade associations are already salivating. What can be done to keep them at bay? Follow three simple rules. First, the stimulus package should be transparent. Unlike the opaque Treasury bailout of Wall Street, spending priorities should be posted on the Internet along with reasons why they are priorities. All contracts should be subject to competitive bidding, with the final winning and losing bids also clearly posted. Second, and also by contrast to the Wall Street bailout, lobbyists should be barred from receiving any benefits at all from the stimulus package. The rule should be that no stimulus money may go to any company that has paid a lobbyist to seek any portion of the stimulus package on its behalf. Finally, the stimulus package may not contain earmarks or special allocations of money to any state or locale. The only valid reason for state or local governments getting stimulus funds should be to remedy their budget shortfalls and thereby restore public services. This means no amendments to the stimulus bill. Make it a straight up or down vote. These three rules won't guarantee the stimulus package is free from pork and corporate welfare, but they'll vastly improve the odds.
Robert Reich teaches at the University of California, Berkeley. His latest book is called Super Capitalism. You're welcome to share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.